thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show. I am Conall O'Moran. This is episode 56, posting on the 8th of October, 2021. We are big fans of business networking, whether it's IIBN.com, that's the Irish International Business Network that I'm pleased to chair, or the Ireland-Connecticut Business Council that a group of us formed to help Irish businesses find an easy beachhead in Connecticut, USA, when starting to focus on the North American markets. So, with that in mind, I was at the first live IIBN event in 20 months just last week, and to prove the value of networking, as if it were needed, I decided on this episode to have just two businesses from the 80 or so companies that attended the IIB event join us here. If they hadn't been at the networking event, they wouldn't be on That Great Business Show. Networking works. QED, as my old maths teacher would have said. In a minute, I'll have a selling expert with me about whom Justin Twiddy, he's the MD of Grinka Ireland, said the daily structures that and processes that Peter Turley put in place have literally changed the lives of employees in our company for the better, especially when it comes to time management and sales targets. So stick around for that. My second guest is Chris Burge, co-founder and CEO at Spark Crowdfunding, and he wants to give Irish investors access to new investment opportunities that would previously only have been open to venture capitalists or private equity firms. And that's all coming up in the next hour. But as always, we acknowledge our wonderful sponsor, DeFacto Shave Oil, makers of the world's best shaving oil. Their support brings you the best business insights every week. So do the right thing. Back them by buying their product. Now that we're traveling again, their 25ml bottle of all-natural shaving oil is your ideal travel companion, and shipping is free for orders over €20. Now, I spent many years in stockbroking where I learned a thing or two about selling. Since those days, I've often noticed that though Irish people are hugely charming and affable, that doesn't always transfer into an ability or maybe even oddly a desire to close the deal. With that in mind, I have with me in studio Peter Turley, a past winner of the National Enterprise Award for Innovation, as well as picking up a gong as the TAB Ireland Business Speaker of the Year. Now, Peter may sound a little groggy today, but we will forgive him after he tells us what he was up to last night. Peter Turley, welcome to That Great Business Show. What were you up to last night?
Good afternoon. My God, what a way to put it, Colin.
As they say, a guard wouldn't even ask you that question.
What was I up to last night? Well, actually, you mentioned in the intro there that I had been the TAB Ireland Speaker of the Year a couple of years ago. And the international organization TAB, which is better known as the Alternative Board, is the world's largest SME advisory company. They're in 22 countries and have thousands and thousands of members. And yesterday was their global convention for 2021. And I was the final keynote at that convention. And because it had to be Californian time, we actually had to start off last night at 1:30 a.m. in the studio to feed out across the world on Zoom.
And you kept going for an hour.
Kept going for an hour.
Now, yes. An hour on Zoom is tough if you are trying to hold an audience and a mic and everything else. An hour on Zoom in the middle of, good God, that's tough.
It was. It's hard work, but it's enjoyable, you know.
Did they give you a rapturous applause at the end?
Oh, I would have said standing ovation, but you can't see whether they're standing or not, you know.
Well, that is very kind of you to come in to join us here on That Great Business Show, because we, or I in particular, have a particular thing about selling.
Okay.
I think we don't do selling all that well. Oddly enough, charm, yes. In the door, yes. Seal the deal, N-O. Discuss.
You're not terribly wrong with that. There are a couple of reasons for it, I think. especially in this country, one of the, for the last 50 years, Fáilte Ireland, or Bord Fáilte as it was called before, advertised us around the world as, come and meet the Irish, and we have the gift of the gab. And, you know, like all good advertising, we fell for it. And we kind of believe, yo, we have the gift of the gab. And a lot of people tend to think that selling is nothing more than talking to people. And sure, look, if we can talk to people, surely we can sell anything. But as you've quite rightly mentioned, that one of the problems we have in this country is that we don't like to offend. You know, you could get the worst meal you've ever had in a restaurant, and when the server comes and says, is everything okay? You say, oh, it's delicious, thank you very much, right? And there is a fear people have that to ask for the deal may cause offence. So we do sometimes tend to waffle around the subject, you know?
How do we overcome that? For example, sell me this show.
Sell you the show.
Tell me why I should buy this show.
Well, I can't tell you why you should buy this show.
Okay,
you see, that's the real secret of selling. Is there's an old phrase that selling is telling. Okay, and this is why one of the problems comes in. I don't know enough about you yet, Connell, to know how I could sell you this show, because I don't know what's important to you. I don't know what matters to you. I don't know what you're looking for out of this show. I don't know, myriads of things about you. So how can I sell you anything? Okay. So in actual fact, as I said, selling is telling is the old fashioned way of looking at it. Whereas asking questions, finding out what matters to people, finding out how something could fit in with their life, finding how it would advance or enhance their life is the real key to selling. So I'm not going to sit here and try and make a presentation to you about your own show when I don't know what I need to say to you.
I was hoping to pick your brains. Okay, let's say I'm selling screws, because people do sell screws. You're not going to enhance anybody's life selling screws.
That depends. Now, there's a reason I say that. It does depend. When did you last put up a set of shelves in your home, and 2 hours later, when you'd put all your lovely knickknacks and your picture of the mother-in-law and all that kind of stuff up on the frame, on the shelf, and they fell down?
You ask me when? Never. I'm too good for now that time.
No, but look, it's the kind of thing that's happened to all of us, right? So if we find out that somebody's had a repeated problem with shelves falling down or doors falling off their hinges or whatever, then we need to say, right, what difference would it make if I could find you the right screw today that would make sure you never have a door fall down in the middle of your dinner, or a shelf fall down in the middle of your watching your favorite TV program or whatever. Now there's a real value to the screw, okay? And sitting there telling them that it's made from tungsten carbide steel that was forged in a factory in the middle of Middle Earth under a mountain makes no difference, okay? Does that make sense?
It does indeed. Sell me a car, because you know how to sell a car.
I know how to sell a car, but I also can only sell a car to somebody when I know what they use it for, what kind of mileage they do in it, whether it's for work, whether it's for personal, maybe where they go on their holidays, maybe what kind of miles budget they have for fuel and all that kind of stuff. There are too many parameters to just walk in and make a presentation about anything.
So how should a salesperson begin his or her day?
How should they begin their day? Now, there's a question. Well, it's about... The way I put it very simply is, we are all frustrated about salespeople, aren't we? Have you ever employed salespeople yourself?
Well, I mean, I lived and worked with them for many years.
For many years, yeah.
In a sales environment,
Okay, so you're familiar with the processes that they might normally use, right?
It's called a bonus. If there's a bonus at the end, people will go that extra, not 1 mile, they'll go many miles.
They will. They will go many, many miles, except that the way I see it is slightly different. It's not just about putting a bonus in front of somebody, okay? Here's a slightly different way of looking at it. None of us decided when we were 15 and filling out the CAO form for the leaving cert or whatever it was, oh, I'm going to put down sales. Okay. So we all go off and we do something else at college. And then we go off and we probably work for somebody else for a while. And we become masters at doing the work, you know, being a plumber or being an architect or whatever it happens to be. We learn that. We go to college. We become the best of the best at that. And then at some point we decide, well, maybe we'll go self-employed or we become a, you know, the boss says, you have the gift of the gab. Would you like to meet the customers or whatever it happens to be? And we say, yes, we'll have a go at it. Now, the thing is, we discover when we start meeting people that actual getting the business is much harder than doing the business, isn't it? So we kind of say to ourselves, let's try and find somebody who'll do that bit for us, right?
That is so true.
Isn't it?
I'm hearing this because I hear this so often.
I hear it all the time, right? But what happens is we feel so uncomfortable trying to close sales and make sales that we want somebody else to take that off our hands as quickly as possible, right? Now, if you've ever had a situation where you've seen a child join a school football team or something and they say, Conal, would you be the coach next year, right? Immediately say, oh, I'll give €500 donation to the Jersey Fund. But as far as being the coach, anyone but me, just pick anyone and that's fine by me. Does that sound familiar when people pick salespeople? As long as I don't have to do it, anyone that can sell, right? And they just pick somebody. Are you with me?
I'm with you. I'm thinking about it as you say it, as to how is a salesperson chosen? But see, I mean, people say that they've done sales courses and stuff like that.
If I had a euro for every time that a business owner said to me, can you find me a salesperson? And I say, what kind of salesperson? And they say, well, any a salesperson's a salesperson, right? But depending on the product or the service that you're trying to sell, different styles of selling suit different industries, okay? And even in certain industries, because human beings are who we sell to, different personalities and different ways of going about it may be attractive or very unattractive to a particular potential customer. So you need people with different skills and different traits and different things, right? I always akin it to a rugby team. You can have an amazing scrum half and they would be classed as a very good rugby player. But move them into the full back position and what happens? Or move them into the second row in the scrum and what happens? You'd immediately come away going, they know nothing about rugby. They're a dreadful rugby player, right? And it's exactly the same in sales. It's more, far more complicated than just saying, I need a salesperson, right? And that's where most people stop. They go, we want a salesperson, right? Now, I believe in any department, in any business, Conal, whether it's the accounts department, whether it's the sales department, if you have six things in place, that makes sure you get the right person. And it's very simple. Let's think of it this way. If you had the right person in the right job, doing the right things in the right way at the right time for the right outcome, would you ever have a problem with your staff?
Probably not.
Probably not. Exactly. But to be able to make that work, you should start at the other end. If you say, right, what outcome do we want this person to create? What time of the day, what times will they need to be doing things to get that outcome? What are the right things that they should do to reach that outcome in the right ways? What's the right job that they should be in to meet that outcome? And if we know all of those, you'd nearly get a picture in your head of what the right person might be, wouldn't you?
You might. However,
yes.
Do those people exist? Like, if that sounds like Mr. or Mrs. Perfect.
It is Mr. or Mrs. Perfect, right? And it's very, very hard to find them.
I know.
But there are two ways of finding them. You can either find somebody that's already got it and they're rare, or what you can do is you can take The bit two in the middle, which I think are the most important, which are the right things in the right ways. And you can develop people if you've picked the right person. So again, to use the rugby analogy, you can find somebody with exactly the right stature to be a number eight. They could have the strength, they can have the height and all that kind of stuff. As long as they have those core values, you can teach them to be a very good number eight. But if they're like me and they're only 5'6", it doesn't matter what development you give, I'm never going to be able to play number eight. Are you with me? So it's about finding the people with the potential and then doing a little bit of development. And that's where I see the biggest changes can be made, right? Let's imagine that we're standing on a football pitch right now and you've called me on to take a penalty and the ball is on the spot and the goal is over there. I know because I've seen a football match on the telly that the right thing to do is to kick it, right? I know, we know that, right? But I've never kicked a penalty. So what are my chances of kicking it in the right way to get it to go in the net? They're pretty slim, aren't they? Now, we see in a lot of training in any area around the world, be it sales training or any kind of business training, we go away and somebody teaches us in a book. And it's exactly the same thing as saying to somebody, when you're in that situation, what you need to do is you need to kick the ball. Now, next page, on to the next bit, right? But if we don't teach them the right way, not just the right thing, but how to do it in the right way, where's it going to end up, right? So that's the first thing. And we said today we talk about how to find, how to recruit, how to develop, how to manage, how to motivate, and how to retain good people.
And we are going to discuss all of those. But before that,
yes,
somebody else has to do a bit of selling because we are sponsored by De Facto Shaving Oil.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by De Facto Shaving Oil. The best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide. That Great Business Show.
And I'm back now with Peter Turley, super salesman, or a person who may be able to find you a super salesperson. Right, Peter, let's go through that list.
Yes.
From the beginning.
From the beginning. Recruit.
Where do you recruit good salespeople from?
Okay. My take on it is, going back to the six things, you've got to start with the benchmark. So to be able to attain the outcomes that you're looking for, you work that back, you benchmark that to the right things, you benchmark that to the right style, to the right person. And then what you do is you benchmark that, say, application, you benchmark that advertisement to find the right person for the job. Okay. And it's really interesting. People say to me, that's very, very difficult, right? But what I found with all my customers is that once we do that and benchmark it backwards, an image of a particular person might appear in their head, right? Have you ever, somebody said to you at any stage, what you need, Connell, is you need this type of car. And you go, really? I've never heard of that type of car. And as soon as you go out on the road that evening, you start to see that car everywhere.
I have seen, yes.
Right? And this is what happens. When we don't know what we're looking for, it becomes incredibly hard to find it. But when we do know what we're looking for, your brain starts to see it much more easily.
Hen's teeth, though, good salespeople are,
yes,
and the likes of the Googles and the Stripes and the Facebooks and all, are hoovering them up.
They are hoovering them up, absolutely.
So how could, because we are primarily an SME podcast, mm-hmm, how could my friends in SME land try to zero in and capture and catch really good salespeople?
Rather than not wanting to be the harbinger of doom here, it is, as you've said, very difficult to find good ones. I believe the best thing for people to do is find people with potential and develop them into great salespeople in exactly the same way.
You know what happens after that? Facebook, Google, etc. come knocking on the door and they're away.
That all depends how you treat them.
Okay.
Now, and I mean that very much because I looked at one of the things we talked about at the conference last night was this looming thing that the world is talking about called the Great Resignation. And what's causing the great resignation, right? And that's a lot of people saying, oh, it's because people now have got used to staying at home and they want to stay at home. They don't want to commute and all that kind of thing, right? I think it's bunkum, right? I actually think people are leaving jobs in droves because fundamentally human beings are a herd animal. We love to belong to something. We love to belong to an entity, right? And if we feel we belong to something, we'll go to the ends of the earth for it, right? Think of the Irish rugby supporters, Irish football supporters, Premier League football supporters. They feel so much part of an entity that they will buy the clothes themselves, right? They'll buy their own uniforms to go and watch the matches, to travel throughout the world because they have a passion for it. You with me? And they feel part of a tribe, right? Imagine what would happen if a company treated their staff so well that they felt part of a tribe. Would they leave?
No.
Now, you see, this is where I believe the big change has to happen. Just before lockdown, I was speaking at a conference in Croke Park. There were almost 1,000 people in the audience. And I asked a question, and that was, if you won €1 million in the lotto today, how many of you would stay in your jobs? Can you guess how many people put their hands up?
I'm going to guess a large number, 80% or something like that.
It was about 5 out of 1,000, right?
Okay.
It even surprised me as how low it was, right? Now, what does that tell you? That certainly tells me that those people are in those jobs for one thing and one thing only, and that's to pay the mortgage or make the car payment or whatever, you know, whatever they need the money for. They're not there because they love it. They're not there because they have a passion for it.
Sorry, right? Did I not hear you correctly? You said if I won €1 million, how many people would leave?
No, I said how many people would stay.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I thought you were saying the other way.
No.
I was thinking, okay.
No, only about
so
5 would remain in their
jobs.
Was
correct. Yes. I said 80% would go.
Would go, yes, 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 yes. In fact, it's higher. It's nearly 95%, yeah. Right? Yeah. Or even higher again. And that's what, so what it's telling me is, they're only there because they've got to make money. They have no passion for it. Now, they probably have no passion for it because they could very easily be just treated as a number, right? Now, when those people go on from there, because you see, if you develop somebody and you have an interest in them and you know a lot about them and you treat them well every day and you have a personal as well as a business relationship with them and they feel they're part of a family, they in fact don't tend to leave jobs, right? But when we go on in our careers, what happens is some of us strive to move very quickly because, oh, the next goal and the next salary and the next increase and the next promotion, right? But if we let it develop over time, it happens in a very different way. And you mentioned that some of them go off to the very, very, very big companies, right? And some of the ones that I deal with have over 800 salespeople in offices, probably not too far from here. When they go and they end up in a company like that, does that feel like a family?
Nope.
Does that feel like something we can get right into? Does that feel like an entity that cares? Or is that actually, do you think they've discovered that they're even more of a number?
I'm going to guess number, but what they like is there's a very big number coming in.
There is a very big number.
At the end of the month.
There is a very big number. But for us, for people who have SMEs and are afraid of, and it doesn't, not necessarily just sales staff, but any staff in particular, I believe how they make those staff feel, how they let them know that they have an important part in the role of that company dictates how long they stay. I truly believe that.
Now, we have a list,
yes.
But we've only 10 minutes.
Okay.
So you now are going to talk nonstop for 10 minutes and get through the list.
Okay. We've talked a little bit there about how to recruit and how to think about the right person for the right job. Okay. We talked a little, there's a little bit there in the retaining, which was at the other end. How do you develop? Well, I believe you have to develop people. You have to. And showing them videos of how to do what they're doing or sending them on a one day a year, you know, the car wash mentality. Here you go. Bang. Right. You're ready for another year's go. it's like I said earlier, you're not going to learn to kick the goal by reading about it in a book, okay? So I believe that constant positive work with somebody, okay, the way a football coach might do it or a rugby coach or whatever, much less than the traditional carrot and stick effect that we're used to, would go a very long way to having people stay with you, if that makes sense. So the development is really, really key to making everything else work. Also, people, if you have an interest in one of your member of staff's career so much that you help them to improve their career and help them to earn a salary, how do you think they're going to feel about you?
They're going to feel positive.
They're going to feel very, very positive, okay? And yet, what we see out there is, in many areas, especially in selling, a massive lack of development and training in that area.
But is that, again, the pressures, the real pressures of real business? Oh, God, you know, we have to shift 10,000 boxes this month. Oh, God, one of our clients has just said we never deal with this again. Oh, God, 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 whatever.
Yes.
So where do you find the time when you're putting out all these fires to, you know, be lovey-dovey and developmental?
You have to find it, okay? There is no real other answer and there is no real other excuse to it, right? You have to just find it. And in actual fact, our studies in our business would tell us that if you spend just 2 hours per week per salesperson, helping them to increase the business that they're bringing in, that over the period of a year will increase the throughput for that salesperson by 10% per annum, right? It's only 2 hours per person. Now, we know because Facebook went down last week, right? We know that the research coming back is telling us that the productivity in the States, because it was during the States working day that it really was down, productivity in the States went through the roof while Facebook was down, which has to tell us that people in offices all over the States are on Facebook for at least 2 hours a day, right? So if they're prepared to spend time on Facebook for 2 hours a day, surely there's 2 hours a week there that we can find to help develop this stuff.
Okay, we'll give that as a yes. Next, please.
So that was the development. And then the motivation, okay? Motivation, and this is what I found in my area. Customers are what? All individuals. That's why I started this whole thing with, I cannot make a presentation to you for the show. I cannot make, because a one size never fits, right? You go down to any of the department stores downstairs here in Dundrum, go in and ask them if they got a one size. Who does it fit properly? No one, right? So in exactly the same way, what I always found was that the incentive packages that are being put in for people, it's the same package for everybody. It takes nobody's interests into account. Well, what if you knew your staff well enough to know that somebody, they're really motivated by a holiday? Someone else is motivated by getting a new car every couple of years. And instead of just coming down the heavy with the usual KPIs, he said, if you reach your targets this year, I'm going to pay for your second annual holiday. Or if you reach your targets this year, I'm going to pay the down payment for your next car or whatever. And they become individual for people that, in a way that they actually have meaning. What do you think will happen to those people's motivation?
I'm going to guess it would be positive. We're back to that word positive again.
We're back to positivity, yeah. Right? Okay. And really and truly, you know, the hardest part, because of the way we've been brought up, the hardest part for all of us when we look after other people is to continuously be positive, right? I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to call out 5 things to you. I want you to listen really carefully, say nothing until the 5th one is said. And then I want you to tell me the first thing that comes into your head. How about that? Okay.
Well, since I misheard you a few minutes ago, let's go.
So, listen. So 1 multiplied by 1 is 1.
1.
2 multiplied by 2 is 4. 3 multiplied by 3 is 9. 4 multiplied by 4 is 15. And 5 multiplied by 5 is 25. Hit me.
16.
Yeah. Now, what can you deduce from what I've just said? I purposely got one wrong.
No, I didn't.
And I did that to prove a point. 80% of what I just said to you was completely correct. You could not wait to tell me the one that I got wrong. You couldn't wait. Nothing was going to stop you from saying that to me, right? Now, why do I bring this up? Because in actual fact, in the last 30 years of working, almost every annual review that I have had, all people could talk about was the 20% in the year that didn't go so well. And nobody was ever allowed or had any effort to talk about the 80% that went right. You with me? Now, when you can't, and I'm sure your own experience probably isn't that much different, right? Now, when we are surrounded by that, think about this. You go in, you have a very negative annual review, which I know the way they're thinking. They're thinking if we don't give him too much praise, he won't ask for a pay rise, right? It's this simple, some of this stuff sometimes. Now, but what I know, because I've watched hundreds of people over the years come out of reviews, they go straight to their desk and the very first thing they do is they Google jobs.ie. The next thing they Google is high quality CV templates, right? And they are checked out. Now, they might not carry that through, but for the next few days, are they working at 100% capacity?
Nope.
They're not even working at 10% capacity. You with me? But yes, if they come out feeling in some way positive, do you think we'd have the same issue?
No.
No, absolutely not.
You're almost out of time. I'm going to give you one last sentence before I ask you our final question. So just one little nugget
for hiring the best. For hiring the best.
The salesperson.
The best salesperson. I'm going to really bring it back. The best way is to understand what kind of salesperson you really need. Okay? Is it if you're selling cars, for example, somebody buys a car once every 3 or 4 years and it's a pretty quick sale. So you need the quick type, what they call the hunter-gatherer type salesperson. But if you're selling, for example, services where you are going to be dealing with that customer for the next 20 years doing their accounts or whatever it is, or selling them packages for accounts, they need somebody who's a relationship person. That's what we in the business call a farmer type salesperson. They are poles apart. They are the difference between the scrum half and the number eight. They can't actually crisscross. It's not physically possible. So to actually understand what type of salesperson is the first step that anybody should take before hiring.
That makes sense. Yes. And that thump was Peter crisscrossing. You know what the final question is because I sent you the email.
Yes.
Unlike some other people who've appeared on this program who didn't read their email, your hire in a heartbeat, Peter Turley.
My hire in a heartbeat, with that, trying not to sound cliched, would probably be, if I wanted an advisor on my board, it would probably be somebody along the lines of Richard Branson.
I keep telling people that, in fact, on my next email, I'm going to say, don't anybody choose Richard Branson. He must be whatever it is about him, to be fair to him,
well,
he must be the most sought after. Certainly, we've done 170 interviews on this podcast series. I'd say 10, 20, 30 people have already said Richard Branson.
Now, there's a reason for that.
Go on.
And in early 2018, I was lucky enough to get in a room with Richard Branson.
Yeah, did you
and my biggest, my biggest takeaway from it was, on that very day, he said he was the CEO of 394 companies. How can anybody be the CEO of 394 companies and not go mad?
Boxes,
I'm sure they are to a certain extent. And he said he only works 6 months of the year. But when he works 24 hours a day almost for those 6 months. And he said the secret to it was, and you're going to laugh when you hear this, he said the secret to being able to have all that was having the right people in the right jobs, doing the right things in the right ways at the right times for the right outcomes. He said, when I have that set up, I can go to Necker Island and I can windsurf and I don't need to worry about those businesses. Now, if that's not the best piece of advice that anybody can ever get, I don't know what is.
Richard Branson, you're hired. Peter Turley, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And if you want to find Peter, peterturley.ie.
peterturley.ie.
Thank you so much, Peter Turley.
You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure, Colin.
You're listening to That Great Business Show.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Crowdfunding is one of those things that we all think we know how it works, but if push came to shove, well, we mightn't be too sure about things like the minimum investment, how good the success rate is, what happens when an investment fails, or how do you get your money back, etc., etc. So I asked Chris Burge, he is co-founder and CEO of Spark Crowdfunding, who is an IIBN regular and a big, big supporter of this podcast on LinkedIn, to come along and bring us through the A to Z of crowdfunding, warts and all, the way we like it. Chris Burge, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, you are so kind on LinkedIn and on Twitter and on other social media about the podcast. We had to have you in. You know, that's the way it works, isn't it?
Absolutely.
This is about networking, and you network and I network with you, and there you are. That's why you're on that on this podcast. Question. Just what is, in its simplest form, crowdfunding?
Well, we help young startup companies get funding from a big group of investors on the other side. So we have a two-sided marketplace. Investors on one side, investees, i.e. companies looking for investment on the other side, and we matchmake the two between each other.
If I am putting money into a company, I want shares. Is there a formal contract?
Absolutely. So no, all of this is done through a legal mechanism so that when the investors put their money in, they get a contract saying that they are shareholders of the business. So yes, absolutely. It's a legal contract.
And are those contracts ever challenged? Have you seen court cases saying, no, I didn't really mean that, or I didn't know, I thought it was bigger or better or brighter?
No, it's a very standard contract, and we have one of the best law firms in the country doing this for us, Beechams, who also work for Enterprise Ireland. And they have put together a contract that states that these people who have invested into this business have shares in this business. And these contracts are they happen very frequently across all walks of life, whether it be crowdfunding or whether it be Davies or a stockbroker or any other format for investing. And we do the same.
Speaking of Davies, I could go down and buy shares in CRH and it all works very smoothly, and I can see the share price going up and down every day, and I know who and what the management is, and all those good things. Is it the same with a crowdfunding investment?
Not really. Obviously, CRH is a public limited company, and it's quoted on a stock exchange. And you can see the share price, on a daily basis. And if you buy shares in CRH, yes, they will go up or down, of course, and will make a marginal increase or decrease in the price that you had. It's unlikely that they'll suddenly double or triple or quadruple in size, whereas with crowdfunding, we support young startup companies that are very scalable and high growth, but comes with that high risk as well, of course. So you put your money into a company or even a group of companies, a portfolio of companies, and you hopefully see some of those do really, really well. And that's where you make your money. Some of them, unfortunately, will fail. And that's just part and parcel of investing in young startup companies.
And what is the hit rate, as they call it? What is the success rate?
It depends on where you read, but between 5 out of 10 or 6 out of 10 will fail. And so you need to know that 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 will make some good money. And so you're not expecting a small percentage increase or even a 50% increase. You're hoping for a doubling or, as I say, tripling or quadrupling or more of your money.
Do tell me some of the success stories with Spark Crowdfunding of how much anything has gone up by.
Well, we've not actually had an exit yet. Even though we've been going for 3 years, the companies that we've promoted haven't yet actually had an exit. And that's not uncommon, because some of these exits would typically take 4 or 5 years to actually happen. So, of course, the companies we funded 6 months ago won't have scaled enough to actually be purchased. So we're hoping for our first one. We think that one of them will go probably early next year, midway of next year, and that will be a great way of obviously cementing in those investors' funds. But we have had subsequent rounds, not necessarily ourselves funding them, but the companies that we have previously funded have gone on to have other rounds. And in fact, we're about to announce another one just in a couple of days' time.
You can announce it now.
No, I can't, unfortunately. No, it's not all not been signed off yet. But we know of one that we did very early on, a company called Fleet. In fact, it was one of our first big ones. They subsequently went on and raised at a value of 3x. So the investors, even though it's not cemented in, they've got a paper profit, if you like, of 3x their investment. So if they put €1,000 in, they've now got 3,000.
Minimum investment?
Our minimum investment on our platform is €100. So, very affordable for pretty much everybody. Not everybody has €100, understandably. But no, we try and keep it as low as we possibly can without causing thousands upon thousands of investments in, which make things a lot more complicated.
And costs for me as an investor, if I want to invest, what are my costs?
Zero. As an investor, you pay zero fees, zero commissions, zero everything on the investment into Spark. So your €1,000 goes directly to the company, and there's no cost for an investor.
So where does Spark make its money?
Well, Spark recoups its money from the company. So I suppose if you want to kind of look at it that way, but you are getting €1,000 worth of shares out of that company. Yes, the company pays us for raising their money, and we have a success fee for that, and that success fee is 7%.
You get 7% if and when you raise X amount of money as per agreement.
Yes, absolutely. So they'll have a target amount. So that target may be 100,000 or 200,000 or whatever. If they reach that and beyond, then that is then a successful campaign. And we will get the 7% off that. Yeah.
And what kind of due diligence do you or your colleagues do, and how do you do that?
We do. We use many of the companies that are on the platform are HPSU, which stands for High Potential Startup, and Enterprise Ireland give them that moniker because they have gone through the ringer with them, and they are state sponsored. So many of the companies have already gone through a reasonable amount of due diligence with Enterprise Ireland. We of course have to do ours, and we do, and we do an element of it. But it really is incumbent on the investors to do their own homework to make sure that they are happy with the business, they know what is what they're buying into, and so they have to do their own homework as well.
The investor, so that's me. So how would I know what a company is good at or not good at? Or isn't that it? Going back to Davies or Good Buddies or the other stockbrokers, they do the research for you. Now, of course, you pay them a fee for the pleasure. And frequently, that research need not necessarily be completely accurate, but there is a research team in all of these big houses doing that work for you. I'm going to take an example. Somebody who's making a better mousetrap. How would I know it is going to be an exceptionally good mousetrap?
Well, you don't, is the answer. You're taking a bit of a punt on this. This is an early stage business. Some of them are pre-revenue, some of them are post-revenue, absolutely. But they are very nascent in their whole being. So you are looking at it as a whole. And most times you're looking at the promoter as well. Is this promoter a CEO of a business that you think that will actually do well? Do they look as if they are able to run a business and grow it and scale it to the size in order to give you as an investor a return on your money? And that is a question that is often asked, but nevertheless, we do an element of that checking, and happy to do that. But again, it's really incumbent on the investor to have a look at it. But we make a load of documents available to them for them to do their homework. But of course, we put the rule over it ourselves. We only take about 1 in 10 companies that actually apply to us.
Really?
So we do the initial sifting, if you like, and making sure that we are happy with the valuation. We are content that it's a business that is of some worth.
I love the whole area of valuation. There is the Chris Burge version of a value, and there is the promoter's version of a value. How often do you come in, or sorry, do people come into you with nut job valuations?
Frequently.
No names, but how mad is mad?
Oh, 10 times what we'd probably give it. Whoa. In some cases. Yes. Yeah.
And are they bitter and twisted when they leave you thinking that you have no idea how business works, or?
Some of them take umbrage in the fact that we've cast our eyes over it and told them that they're totally ludicrous valuation. Absolutely. But some are, the 10x, 10x example is a little rare, but nevertheless, there are people who come in with a double valuation quite frequently, and we go, listen, that's not going to float. And if they are adamant that that's their valuation, then okay, they walk away, and we say, listen, you're not coming onto the platform, and that's fair enough. But normally, most people are sensible, and they go, okay, well, listen, okay, we'll come somewhere in between. But ultimately, it's the investor that decides. It's not really Spark that decides. We just make it available to our investors at a point that we are not going to be embarrassed by putting it up in front of our investors. And the investor decides. They decide whether they're going to invest or they won't. There's no negotiation that the investor can do. It's very binary. They invest or they don't. And that's where you either get your money or you don't get your money.
How many companies are on the platform now?
Currently, we have two on the platform. We're about to launch another one live on Monday, which is a company called Access Earth. Very exciting company. We're very happy for that to be going live.
Sell it to me. Come on.
Access Earth is run by a gentleman called Matt McCann. Unfortunately, he suffers from cerebral palsy, and so he's had very big difficulties in getting access to various places around the world. And so he's devised with his co-founder a mechanism to analyze stadia, hotels, venues around the world, but also has an ability to actually have input from consumers as to the accessibility of these places as well. So he's kind of produced a database and an access mechanism that people who want to go and visit the Shelburne can find out how accessible it actually is. So it's a very nice platform that he's developed.
And how big a raise are they making or looking for?
He's looking for a minimum of 150, but we'll take more than that.
How do you work that if you have it open-ended that way? Because how do you, if there's only so much of the company for sale?
Well, if they raise more than the minimum amount, they will give more equity away. The valuation is the fixed element to this. So they want to their target is 150. If they can get more than that, it opens up more doors. They can bring in a new developer, or they can kind of go into a new access, a new segment, or new area that they can promote the business in. So that's what the difference is.
Minimum of 100 euro. Maximum, is there a maximum?
No maximum. We've had investments of, well, the single biggest investment that we've ever had is 200,000 euros into one campaign.
Some individual?
One individual, yeah, absolutely. So very high net worth, obviously. But we often get 20s, 50s, 70 grand going into campaigns as well from individuals as well. So yeah, there are some very deep pockets out there, obviously, but we keep it open to 100 euros to allow everybody to come in as well.
And you call them campaigns. From start to finish, normally, how long would a campaign be?
One of the quickest ones that we did was about 9 weeks from kind of inception at kind of first opening up the conversation with the investee to actual money in the bank. But it normally takes a little bit longer. But between 10 and 12 weeks is quite normal.
Have these companies kind of exhausted all other options, or do they choose to do this for a reason, or...?
They choose to do it for a reason, because we are very quick in raising the money. If you were to do this with a VC, you'd be tied up with legals for 6, 9, 12 months, even in some cases. And same with private equity houses as well. There's an awful lot of hoops to go through with that. So it's quick. There's amazing amounts of publicity that you can get through it as well. And we demonstrated that with kind of hundreds of articles that have been written, not about Spark necessarily, but mentioning Spark, but also about the businesses that we've had on the platform. And
one of them being Zip Mobility. We had Charlie Gleason on the show.
Yes.
And a very entertaining man he is too.
Absolutely.
And how many other companies have gone through the platform?
We've done 25 now.
That's very good. Yeah, over those periods of 3 years.
Yeah.
How big can you become? How big can Spark become? Can you start looking at the UK? I presume you're open to anybody anywhere anyway.
Well, we are, absolutely. Particularly as this, there's new regulation coming in November, so in a month's time, that will passport that open to the rest of the EU. So absolutely, we're very keen and very happy to see that coming down the line.
And is that open to Americans?
Is what open to Americans?
Would your fund be open to, or your platform?
We can't promote in the US, but if an American happens to stumble across our platform and wants to invest, then yes, absolutely, yeah.
What's the ideal company to go onto the platform?
We're very agnostic in the type of companies that come on board. We've done pretty much a 50-50 split between B2B, B2C, whereas previously a lot of people would have thought that it's only B2C kind of companies. We don't really kind of have a predisposition as to what has to be, you know, the boxes to tick. As long as we see a company that has got a good team, they've got some IP in there, they may be in revenue, hopefully in revenue, but not always necessary, that they've got a very investable person leading it and very investable business to actually invest in.
Tell me what an investable person to you is.
It's a gut feel. It's kind of looking at this person and going, okay, can they run a business? Do they have the vision to actually take this from a fledgling company into something that's much, much bigger? There are some boxes that we tick, but no, a lot of it is gut feel. Is this person able to scale a business and to the necessary level that will give our investor a good return on their investment? That's what we're looking for.
Who regulates you, Spark?
Nobody at the moment, and that's what this regulation is coming in. So as of November, it will be the central bank, and we will be a regulated body.
They'll be down on you like a ton of bricks.
No, I don't think so. We have been talking to the central bank constantly over the last few years. We've made them aware of what we do and how we do it, and they're very happy. Well, they seem to have been happy for us to continue. But of course, when the regulation comes in, as I say, in November, we will be ready to apply, and I'm sure we'll be given the green light and continue on our merry way.
Oh, you need a license, will you?
We will.
Okay, we won't even go down that route because that could take some time. Not because of Spark, just because of other things. The model for Spark based on...
We didn't invent this process. This has been developed many, many times in different jurisdictions. I believe it actually started in Australia about 12, 13 years ago, and obviously moved out of there and into the States and into the UK and across Europe. But we're the first to find a mechanism here in Ireland that works and meets all of the necessary rules and regulations that are here at the moment. And we will obviously be there okay for them when the regulator gets started. That's where it started.
How many companies could you handle going onto the platform if, after this podcast, you get 100 or 1,000 good companies? Now, forget about the 1 in 10 hit, but if you got really good companies, how many could you actually put up there?
Our platform is very, very scalable. In fact, we actually ran a competition, it's still within Spark, but it's called Varsity Sparks. We ran this last year. It's a competition for university students to have a virtual company, to set up a dummy company, an idea of a company. And we had hundreds of campaigns live on the site at that time. And students would then vote for it, and we whittled them down into the finalists, semi-finalists, and then finalists. And we had thousands of investors investing simultaneously. So very scalable, and I've got no problem with our platform at all.
Who I don't remember hearing about this because it sounds fantastic. Who won that one? Can you remember? I shouldn't put you on the spot.
Yes, you have. One of them was called Bubble. One of them was called...
Out of where, can you remember?
There was one out of Limerick, one out of Cork, and one out of Dublin.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
absolutely. And are you going to do it again?
Yes, absolutely.
I love the idea of that.
We start in the new year.
Well, when it does start, make sure to tell us on the podcast, because I would love to promote that. I think it's a brilliant idea. The size of the business here, obviously you're always going to be limited just because the smaller the size of the island. Would you go elsewhere with
We're
it?
We're currently looking at going off this island as well.
Go ahead, tell me more.
No, I can't.
Chris, come on, because
we're looking at a couple of jurisdictions off this island.
But it'll be EU.
It will be EU, absolutely. Well, for the moment, at least. Although we're even looking at kind of beyond EU as well. But we've got aspirations to grow, and we know that the size of the market here has a limitation, absolutely. But we've developed and devised a model that is slightly different from those around the rest of Europe, just because we're so selective with the companies that we put onto the platform and the mechanism that we use. And we think that that is very scalable, and we think that we'll grow outside of Ireland, yeah.
What's the profile of your average investor, if there is such a thing?
The demographic actually has dropped in age significantly in the last 18 months since COVID. So we're getting a lot more millennials and Gen Zs onto the platform. If they've had a stable job and they've had plenty of time and they've not had any return on their investment in a bank, that's for sure. In fact, yeah, there's negative money on deposit. They've seen, okay, well, where else can I put my money? They've not been able to spend it going on a holiday or going out to party. So it's dropped significantly, but nevertheless, the age demographic is still mature-ish, if you like, but nevertheless is dropping, and we're very grateful that it is, because a lot of these millennials and Gen Zs, have got a lot of disposable income, and we're delighted that they're planning for the future and investing in companies that they think are going to grow.
One of the exciting things when you are investing in stocks and shares is that the announcements, and whether it's half year or quarterly in the States, that you find out how the company's doing. How often do your platform companies report?
We mandate that they report every quarter to our investors. So in our terms and conditions, they have to give a one-pager, two-pager report at the end of each quarter. And that's enough to keep the investors appraised of roughly where they are and what they're doing and what markets they're moving into and how the revenues are going and so on. But of course, they then have to do a yearly update as well. And so our investors are kept up to speed with the investments that they've made.
So you are, when I say you, Spark Crowdfunding is another option for funding for companies, particularly very early stage companies.
In fact, I was just got off a phone call before I came here to a company that is very, very well established with multiple millions of revenue, but they need a new piece of CapEx equipment to go onto their, it's a production line. They're also thinking of doing something with us as well.
That's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely, which is away from the norm, if you like, but they'll have a very hefty valuation because of the size of the turnover that they've got and the CapEx that's gone into the business already. But nevertheless, it's a chance for an investor to get in at that stage.
I'm putting a finger in the air, let's call it that it's a 10 million euro company and they want to raise 200,000. What are you getting part of the 10 million at a price? Is it priced at 10, a share of 10 million?
Yes, absolutely. So if the valuation is a 10 million, you're getting a small percentage of, but nevertheless, it's still a large valued company. And so, again, you're just hoping that your 1,000 euro doubles or triples or quadruples. And that's what everybody's hoping for, obviously.
Investors in horses call a toenail interest. Isn't that what they call
exactly,
it?
Exactly, I think so, yes.
So anybody who wants to find you will find you at Spark. Crowdfunding. I was going to say crowd spark funding, but anyway, sparkcrowdfunding.com,
yes.
And you are looking for both investors and investing companies or companies to invest in.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. We need both sides of the marketplace to actually to grow both sides, yeah, absolutely.
Now, your final question is, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
We recently did a campaign for a company called ASX, and that is run by a very nice gentleman called Paddy Power. Paddy Power is the son of David Power and is a very formidable guy. has got a very good business running, but if he was to suddenly stop doing ASX, we'd have him in a heartbeat. Paddy was responsible for many of the guerrilla advertising that Paddy Power's done over the years, and he's amazing at it, and has been very successful in doing so as well. So in order to actually grow the Spark name, we'd love him to be to come on board and be the marketing person for us.
I know Paddy Power very well because on another radio program I used to present, he was a regular guest. He's most entertaining, isn't he?
He is, very much so.
Very. Okay, Paddy Power, you are also hired. You give up that ASX, or is that his?
ASX, yeah.
Yeah, okay, give up that thing. Crowd. It's going to go, Spark is going to go places. I'm going to keep calling it crowd. Spark, crowdfunding. There you go. Chris Burge, thank you for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much.
De Facto backs your businesses, so please back them by buying the world's best shaving oil, defactoshave.com. And as creator Tom Murphy keeps reminding people, it's a shaving oil, not a beard oil. So it is for everyone that shaves. That's why he says it's the best anyone can get. And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 56. Today's top studio engineer was Rob Curry. And later on, Dublin podcast studio manager Peter Rice will be adding his usual spit and polish. Mila Buechas to you both. The team at GBS wants to make more podcasts like the ones we make for the Love Irish Food brand. So if you would like our team to deliver world-class podcasts for you, do please get in touch. And we also want your ads if you want to talk to Ireland's SME community. That Great Business Show is the way to do it. And if you know of a great business that should be, must be featured on Ireland's best business podcast, do not hesitate. Go to greatbusinessshow.com or onto our LinkedIn page where people like Chris Burge and myself chat away most days. Finally, my thanks to our sponsor, defactoshave.com, the world's best shaving oil. Try it for just 1 week and like me, you will be a forever convert. And so from me, Conal O'Moran, until the next time, Slán Tunnel.